Support for OPB comes from our members and from our sponsors, like Tracy Ray from the employment law firm of Baron Liebman. Tracy says that OPB sponsorship is a great way to support the community and connect with Baron Liebman's clients.
It's OPB Politics Now for Friday, January 19th. It's been a tough week for Oregonians. People lost power, their homes, and some their lives as a winter storm battered the state. And as temperatures dropped, it was hard to not think about the thousands of unhoused people living in Oregon. So today, on not a completely unrelated topic, we're going to talk about what housing policies Oregonians can expect from the upcoming session. Specifically, the governor's big priority bill, she says, will mean more affordable housing and fewer people living on the streets. Welcome to the podcast. I'm OPB politics reporter Lauren Dake.
And I'm OPB politics reporter Dirk Vanderhart.
Dirk, on the very last day of the 2023 legislative session, last June, we heard that the governor was in the Senate chambers visiting lawmakers in their office. And it was noteworthy because it was rare, and also because she was basically trying to muster support for a bill that ultimately died at the hands of her own Democratic Party.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, Governor Kotek in her first session being governor instead of House Speaker actually got a lot of what she wanted in the legislature, including a lot of money for housing, some big changes into how the state approaches building and adding housing. But at the very end of the session last year, there was one last item on her to-do list. This was a bill meant to jumpstart housing production in the state. And it included this controversial element that put Kotek in line with home builders and developers, but against some of the environmental interests that she had more often been allied with. Plenty of Democrats were skeptical of the approach too, and Kotek's bill, as you said, wound up failing in the Senate by a single vote, despite the governor's late effort to ensure people would support it.
Let's dig into the details of that bill a little bit. Basically, it was going to help developers build housing faster, and it would do that by ignoring some of Oregon's land use laws and reduce local government's chances to weigh in and reject a builder's proposal.
Yeah, I mean, the bill did a number of things, right? But the piece that got certainly the most scrutiny was this proposal that would have allowed cities to unilaterally rope more land into their urban growth boundaries, these lines that determine where development can occur and where it cannot. You know, usually bringing land into the UGB can be a complex process. There are a lot of hoops to jump through, things to prove, all that. But Kotek's proposal was that essentially for one time only, cities should be allowed to bring a limited amount of land into their UGBs. It could be 150 acres for larger cities, 25,000 people and up, 75 acres for smaller cities. And that land could be used to build and provide more housing. You know, one of the requirements for that, and one that the governor talked up a lot, was that 30% of the units built on this new land be affordable housing. And, you know, this whole thing got very hotly debated. It was sort of inserted into the bill late, and it was the sticking point, as we noted, that ultimately tanked the bill last year.
But overall, we had a governor who received significant support from some of the state's biggest environmental and conservation groups, really pushing a bill that they did not really like.
Yeah, I mean, she bucked, like I said, she bucked some of her allies on this. Groups like, you know, 1,000 Friends of Oregon, the Oregon League of Conservation Voters, were all adamant in their communications to lawmakers at the end of session that the tool Kotek was proposing was, you know, unwise, that ultimately, in their opinion, it was unnecessary to roll back the state's land use planning laws. They have argued that there is enough land within the UGBs of cities to provide for housing, all the housing we need or want at this point. You know, they think the state should be doing other things like ensuring there's money for preparing land, for preparing the land that exists, you know, building infrastructure, roads, sewer lines, all sorts of stuff that new housing can use. Again, you know, this was ultimately something enough Democrats in the Senate agreed with, these groups, to sink the bill. Though I do think we should know on this that, as I put it in a story this week, it was kind of a fluke that it failed, because as you'll remember, Senate Republicans walked out last year over a number of things. And even though they ultimately returned to the Senate and were on hand in enough numbers for the Senate to conduct business on that last day of session, some had remained away in protest. And it is very, very likely, I think, that if even one of those absent Republicans were on hand for this vote, the bill would have passed and we probably wouldn't be having this conversation.
One thing that we know from having covered the governor for many years is that Governor Tina Kotek does not easily give up. So she is now back with a bill that she said she has retooled. She hopes it will get the support it needs to become law. Dirk, what is different about the latest iteration of this bill?
The governor has said her office has been working with all sorts of people and groups interested in this since the previous proposal died to rejigger this bill, you know, improve it, get it ready to sail through both chambers this year. And she talks about the new proposal in some pretty strong terms. Here's what she said earlier this month.
We've continued to improve the proposal, and if passed the way it currently sits, would be the strongest proposal to guarantee affordability in new construction in the country. So we are very excited about the bill. We're looking forward to everyone getting behind it.
And, you know, Kotek is certainly making sure lawmakers get the message that this is her number one priority. She said this week she doesn't plan to float any other bills this session. She also released a draft of the bill she plans to introduce, and it's got some new facets to it. I mean, one big one is that the governor now wants to create a new state agency that can help developers or local governments navigate the state's land use laws and presumably smooth the path of new housing projects. That's one new idea. There's also a piece of it that would see the state lending money to help affordable housing projects pencil out, which is something a lot of people view as necessary. So there definitely are some new aspects to this proposal.
Okay, so there's some new aspects like you laid out, but presumably, there's still a lot of similarities to the original bill.
Yeah, I mean, the central contentious piece behind the last bill, that idea that cities should be able to have an easier time, at least on a limited basis, bringing in land that can be used for housing, is still a big piece of this bill. It's obviously likely to still get a lot of the attention and the debate. The governor has added some new strings to this idea, though. Under her new bill, cities would be required to show that they have a housing shortage, that they need land in order to tap this tool the governor would like to offer them. That has not been enough, I should say, to bring at least the skeptics I talked to on board with the idea of sort of weakening land use laws.
Okay, so the next obvious question is, can the governor muster enough support for this bill to get it passed in the 1 month short legislative session that's coming up?
Yeah, as you know, I tend to be cautious, Lauren. I typically do not like to make too many predictions on this podcast and then just be shown how wrong I was later. On this one, though, I think I will say I will be very surprised if it doesn't pass. And that's partly because of the dynamic I was talking about around the last bill. You know, if every senator were present on the day of that vote last June, I think the bill would have passed. So assuming that there's not another major walkout this year and that lawmakers who voted for the bill before haven't had some major change of heart, it is hard to see how a similar proposal doesn't fly. And I think Kotek would not be putting this forward if she didn't see it as having a good chance of passing. Obviously, though, you know, the legislature is a dynamic environment and things are liable to change. So, you know, look forward to being proved wrong.
One other thing I think that is worth pointing out is that short sessions are historically reserved for, you know, minor budget adjustments, but Kotek's latest proposal comes with a very hefty $500 million price tag, which is a lot of money for a short session.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually been trying to figure out how much exactly the legislature might have to spend this session, because as always, there are a lot of demands on that money. We are not in a budget cut mode like some states are right now. In fact, there seems to be a decent amount of money that lawmakers can spend. Senator Elizabeth Steiner recently told me, she's one of the budget chairs, and told me that it might be around $1.2 billion. So not nothing. But whatever the case is, you know, $500 million will be a huge chunk of it. And as we've said before, I think, it's just going to be interesting to see if lawmakers bite on Kotek's proposal. And Lauren, as you know, when you and I sat down with the governor recently, we asked her about this. We wondered how she would have reacted when she was House Speaker if one of the governors she worked with came into a short session with a budget framework like this, which is pretty atypical. Here's what she said.
I think if a governor can come in and make an argument on a priority, then the legislature should try to get there. That's how I approached anything that Governor Brown or Governor Kitsop or anybody ever brought through to the legislature.
She has also said something that I think is interesting, which is that as part of the spending she would like the legislature to approve this year, she is going to recommend that the state hold back some of the money it would otherwise sock away into its rainy day fund to spend on the priorities she wants to see. So expect that to be something the governor argues for.
I also want to touch on a story that you published today that may factor into all of this, which is some potential big changes in legislative leadership. There's rumblings about a new House Speaker.
That's right. Yeah. House Democrats right now are looking to the future. Their current Speaker, Dan Rayfield, is about to run for Attorney General, actually technically is currently running for Attorney General, which means he might well be pretty distracted when election season hits in full. So some members of his party have successfully pressed for the party to get a jump on figuring out who is the chamber's next leader. And the plan as of this week is for House Democrats to meet next Monday, January 22nd, in a closed meeting to vote on who should be the party's nominee for Speaker. Right now, it appears there are two contenders, House Majority Leader Julie Fahey, she's from Eugene, and Representative Tana Sanchez of Portland, who is one of the powerful budget chairs in the legislature.
This is really atypical timing for something like this. I mean, usually the House figures out who their Speaker is going to be at the beginning of every long session. So what's the thinking here?
Yeah, this is kind of an involved sort of strategy, right? Rayfield has been clear that he plans to maintain his role of speaker through this year's session, that it doesn't sound like he's going to step down early. He wants to sort of marshal this thing. But as I mentioned, he's also running for attorney general. And since the House Speaker typically plays a pretty big role in guiding political races and deciding where to spend, every other year when we have an election, there is a desire on the part of some Democrats to get their new leader in sooner rather than later. If the party didn't do that and formally tap a new speaker, pro-tem speaker Paul Holvey would take over. But in the minds of some Democrats, having, as I say, a more permanent leader is the right play. But I think that the transfer of power here is just kind of strange here potentially, right? Because Democrats have argued voting on their speaker choice before the session, as they're talking about. Essentially, they're going to nominate their next speaker before the session, even though their current speaker is going to keep being speaker during the session. The argument there is that this might make it less likely that Fahey or Sanchez would be tempted to use their positions to court the votes of their colleagues during session. So, Sanchez can't put money to some lawmaker's pet project to try to get votes. Fahey can't help someone's bill get across the finish line, things like that. But supposing Democrats do select a nominee as planned, I think the actual timing of when the full House would vote on a new speaker is not clear. That would require Rayfield to step down. It would require some Republican buy-in to hold the vote. I just think this is going to get pretty complicated. And in fact, you do hear from some Democrats who think this is the wrong play and that they wish this wasn't happening. So I think it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Very involved strategy, like you said. And obviously, whoever Democrats choose will essentially be guaranteed to be speaker since the party has a majority in the House. We will be watching for news on who they select. Dirk, thank you for joining me.
Yeah. Thanks, Lauren.
Before we go, a correction. Last week, I mentioned the governor worked to enshrine abortion rights in the Constitution. She worked to protect reproductive rights, but not enshrine them in the state constitution. I regret the error. And that is it for OPB's Politics Now. This week's episode was produced by Andrew Thien. Our audio engineer is Nalene Silva. Our music comes from Audio Network. We will be back next week with more political news from across the Pacific Northwest. Until then, you can find all of OPB's reporting at opb.org. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.
Member support makes Politics Now and all of OPB's independent journalism possible. Ensure the next fascinating story and join in as a sustainer now at opb.org/pod.